بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله. Yesterday we covered two of the sayings of Imam Hussein, two of the dialogues he had, and there were a couple of lessons that I drew from them. I just want to reiterate those because they're super important. Sometimes people ask, can you be a little more practical? So I just want to show that what we're trying to get out of all of these things that we're covering these days are practical things. Sometimes a few more examples might help the brothers and sisters grasp what's trying to be said. Yesterday there were two things, two lessons, two takeaways from the dialogues that Imam Hussein had. One of them was the dialogue that he had with somebody in his amongst his caravan as they left Mecca, or as they left Medina, excuse me. And another, the dialogue they had with the second Khalifa's son, Abdullah bin Umar ibn al-Khattab. Two lessons, two takeaways. I just want to highlight those again, just so that we take these away from what's being said. They're super important, in my opinion. Number one was that, brothers and sisters, some people think that to be doing the right thing, you have to be doing the harder thing always. Out of all the different things that need to be done, see which one is harder. You have to do that one. I tried to make a point yesterday. Although, in that scenario that we covered where Imam Hussein is speaking to his companion, and his companion tells him, Imam Hussein, let's take another route, because this route that we want to take from Medina to Mecca puts us out there, really. We might be in the enemy's crosshairs if we take this route. But there are other routes, so if we take them, no one's going to find out. We won't be in trouble. Imam Hussein said, no. Right now, our duty is to make as much noise as we can. I'm going to take the route which is the most public one. I want as much exposure as possible. Some brothers and sisters, they'll read this and they'll say, okay, you have to always put yourself out there. Always get yourself in trouble. Then Allah is happy with you. No. Let me share a story with you. In one of these battles of either the Prophet or Imam Ali, after the battle was over and the shuhada were laying on the ground, the ones who had been killed in the way of Allah were on the ground, one of those individuals, one of his relatives says, Hani'an, congratulations to you, shahada, jannah. The ma'soom, whether it was the Prophet or Imam Ali, he said, no. This person attacked when they weren't supposed to attack. They initiated the battle. We're not about that. This person went against orders. So don't be too sure if that person's in a good situation. Always being the one who makes the most noise, always being the one who initiates, always the one who causes, who is the problem or the troublemaker, isn't always the best thing. Yes, Imam Hussein, by some, was seen as a troublemaker, na'udhu billah. But he had to do what he did. Sometimes that is the responsibility, sometimes the exact opposite, not making noise, will be the responsibility. This is something you have to understand. I'm saying this so that some of us don't get disheartened when others might frown upon us and say that, hey, what you're doing, you're just doing it because, you know, it's the safer way out. No, sometimes the safer way out is the wadifa. That's one takeaway. And at the same time, sometimes the route that is the harder one is what you have to take. It really depends on the case. That's one takeaway I really wanted to emphasize. And number two, which was more practical, in his dialogue with Abdullah bin Umar, remember we ended with how Abdullah wept for Imam Hussein. He said, Imam Hussein, I know you're going to be killed, but man, I'm so upset for that, for you. And then he kissed Imam Hussein and all that. Good for him, but the point was that you have to aid him if you know he's going to be killed in this path. You yourself are saying, you yourself, O Abdullah bin Umar, you're saying that I heard the Prophet say that Imam Hussein will be killed. And whoever doesn't aid him will be abased, will be lowly in their life. What I wanted to get out of this The problem with individuals like this is that they have too much attachment to, you know, this worldly life. I don't want to sound cliche, attachment to this worldly life. I said yesterday, I really tried to, you know, drive this home. This point that if I want to be a little detached, or I want to be sure that I'm on the right side when the going gets a little tougher, when bigger decisions have to be made, it takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight. Yes, there will be some cases where a person will make the right decision overnight, although they've led a life of falsehood and a life of sin. But lots of times you won't hear the story of the ones who never made it, because they led a life of sin and disobedience. The point I made yesterday, the practical takeaway, brothers and sisters, if I want to make sure that I'm detached from dunya in a way that when the time comes to make bigger decisions, when I'm stuck at those crossroads in life, I should have practiced throughout life those little tests that Allah puts before me of the wajib and haram. I have to have practiced there and taught myself how to say no in the face of haram. How to say yes when wajib comes up. So that when the bigger tests come, I can easily say yes or no. If a person hasn't practiced throughout their life with the normal wajib and haram, when the harder tests come, which they will come, not Imam Hussein hard, but hard sometimes, you know, whether it's, I don't want to give examples. When tougher situations I'm put in them, it's going to be hard for me to do what's right, because I haven't practiced that throughout my life. So these are takeaways that we have to take from these dialogues, these stories that we're covering. We're not just trying to do history here, or else history, just knowing history is not going to help me. Let's move on. We have two letters to cover today. What we're trying to do, once again, we're trying to know what Imam Hussein had in mind, how he looked at things from Medina to Karbala, so we can take inspiration, so we can use these in our own lives. Look at life the way he looked at life. How much importance should I give to life? How much importance should I not give to life? When a responsibility is put on my shoulders, am I going to man up to it or not? Yeah? That's why we're going to the sayings of Imam Hussein. We love Imam Hussein, but then we don't know what he's talking about, what he said through in this journey. Doesn't work like that. There's a letter that he has. It says, it's a famous letter. That, now some say this letter was written when he arrived in Mecca. Some say that this was written when he was leaving Medina. Nonetheless, whatever it is, the point he makes in it is a little important, because he's speaking to a certain and specific group now. So far, if he's making statements, Imam Hussein, these statements are for anyone and everyone who hears as he's leaving Medina or as he enters Mecca. This letter is written to the Bani Hashim though. When he speaks to others, Imam Hussein has a softer tone. But then when he speaks to people who have a certain position and there are certain expectations of them, his tone changes a little bit. I want us to look at his tone here. First of all, it's very short. If you really want to move someone, you keep it short to the point, and of course the tone makes a big difference. Here, look at this. It's about two lines, one line. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In other words, I'm going to keep it short because I don't need to explain to you, O Bani Hashim, why you should be with me. I'll explain to others. If you remember yesterday or 2 days ago, we covered his will that he wrote and he gave to Muhammad bin Hanafiya. It was like two paragraphs. It was long. There, he's going to explain things. He's going to elaborate, because people who are reading this, they're not going to always be elite individuals. But when it comes to the elite, he says, I don't need to explain myself too much. Two lines, just reminding you. Maybe these two lines I didn't even have to write. I'm just writing them to remind you though. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, min al-Husayn ibn Ali ila Muhammad bin Ali. Waman qibalihi min bani Hashim. Amma ba'd. Waman qibalahu min bani Hashim. Amma ba'd. So the first line is just explaining who the letter is to. So that doesn't even count. It's just one line actually. أما بعد فإن من لحق بي استشهد ومن تخلف لم يدرك الفتح والسلام. One line. Just reminding y'all, Bani Hashim. From Imam al-Husayn ibn Ali to Muhammad bin Ali, his brother Muhammad Hanafiya, and those with him of the Bani Hashim, whosoever joins me will be martyred. And whoever stays behind will never experience victory. So right here, someone's going to ask, oh my God, but we're talking Bani Hashim here, right? How can it even be perceived that some of the Bani Hashim might not accompany Imam Hussein? That's a question. Imam Hussein is writing a letter to Bani Hashim, making sure they join him. We thought Bani Hashim would always be with Imam Hussein. Takeaway lesson right here, brothers and sisters. It doesn't matter whose son you are, whose relative you are. The test is for everybody. No blood relations between Allah and anybody. On the Day of Judgment, I can't be like, hey, oh Allah, you know, I messed up, but you know, I'm the son of the Prophet or the daughter of a Prophet, or I'm the son of an Imam, daughter of an Imam. Did you know, FYI, that some of the biggest troublemakers throughout history were Bani Hashim? Descendants of one of the Imams, sometimes this would happen. One of the Imams gets told on by another descendant of an Imam. Like, how low could you go? Oh, but he's a Sayyid at the end of the day, so he's good, he's off the hook. That's not how it works. Some people say, oh, the Ma'sumin, they get a free pass to Jannah. No, they're scared the most. I want us to remember, no one's off the hook. The test is for everybody. If anyone was off the hook, Allah wouldn't bring them here. There's no point. That's the point of creation, free will and being tested. All of that, that's the reason for our creation. Or else, what's the point of bringing somebody here if I know they're going to make it to Jannah anyway? There's a lot of talk about this. There's a lot of discussion that'll come. There are a lot of questions that might come up and follow-up questions that might come up regarding what I'm saying right now. But that's in a nutshell. I don't want to get into a theological discussion here. The test is for everybody, brother and sister. The Quran says, when the Day of Judgment arrives, فَلَا أَنْسَابَ بَيْنَهُمْ. There is no nasab, no relationships, nothing. Father, mother, son, daughter, they all hate each other. They all want to run away from each other. يَمَا يَفِرُّ الْمَرْءُ مِنْ أَخِيهِ. The day when the person runs away from their own brother, right? Even today we run from our brothers and sisters sometimes, yeah? Our siblings. Back in يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ, for sure. I'm not going to stay around anybody that's going to get me in trouble at the Day of Judgment. So لَا أَنْسَابَ بَيْنَهُمْ. There is no nasab. There is no relationships there. These things don't work there. They might work here. They don't work there. Imam Hussein, one line, guys, one line. He says, whoever comes with me, shaheed. Whoever doesn't come with me, they're never going to taste victory. Before I actually get into some points in this line, one more thing. Brothers and sisters, are we not elite either? Aren't we elite? I think we are elite. I think we are chosen, kind of. Why? Out of all the people, we have hadith that Allah chooses Shia. If you're a Shia, you've been chosen straight up. So right there comes a responsibility. And then I'm not just any Shia. Allah has put me, for example, let's talk about this city, huh? In this city, Allah has given me the opportunity to practice my faith a lot easier than maybe other cities. I'm just going to share something I want to get off my chest. In our city here, it's cool, I call that our city. No, I don't belong to the city. But I'm just saying, in the city of Dearborn, for example, practicing the faith is easy. Why? Because it's a mini Lebanon. You drive around, seriously, it's like, wow. Assalamu alaikum, my Muslim brother. Assalamu alaikum, Muslim sister. All over the place. Yet you'll find that some people are struggling with certain practices of Islam that they shouldn't be struggling with. I can understand there are some harams out there, it's just too hard. It really takes a struggle to stand up against those harams. But there are some things that, hey, even though you're in America, even though you're here, it's not too hard to practice them, although it might be hard to practice them elsewhere. But like in a city like this, it's so easy to practice certain things. For example, hijab. for example, and a lot of other things. And yet a Shia brother or sister will struggle with some of the things that, hey, the expectation is that this is not something to struggle with. If you're struggling with this or that, I can understand. But like this thing right here, for example, let's just say hijab. I don't like going to hijab because that's the thing that usually people are talking about. But since it just stands out, I'm going to just use this example. You guys are not off the hook. If I'm talking to sisters, you guys are worse, all right? So I'm not even going to look at you. Let's talk about sisters. Hijab, for example, in this city. Yeah? Now, sometimes someone needs more explanation. Sometimes someone's not convinced it's wajib. That's fine. We can have discussions and stuff. Sometimes you'll talk to somebody. They'll say, I just took it off. I just took it off. Okay, why? Oh, I don't even know why I just took it off. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We are chosen, kind of, in the sense that Allah has put us in a certain situation where it's much easier to practice the faith. So I better go and either befriend the right people, study a little bit more about why I have to do this, because I can't be like that person who is in some neighborhood out in, I don't know, give me a state that we don't have too many Muslims in. I don't know, North Dakota or something. I don't know about North Dakota. I'm just saying that's the first thing that came to my mind, right? Where there's no one out there that's practicing their faith, and if you do, you really stand out, and it's going to be kind of hard. It's not like that. We're in this city. As a matter of fact, the fact that like someone takes it off might turn more heads than if they're wearing it. You know, these are blessings. The more blessings, the more expectation comes. Of course, I say all of this, but at the same time, I don't want to judge anybody. We're not the ones to judge. Allah is the ones to judge. Sometimes someone who might not be practicing something in Allah's eyes might be higher than someone who practices certain things. But when it comes to other things, they don't practice. When it comes to not backbiting, they're not very careful, things like that. So judging is with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I'm trying to give an example here. Imam Hussein, he writes a letter to the elite. The ones that understand how things work. The ones who have been blessed with more. They are from the family of Bani Hashim, but still, they have failed to accompany Abu Abdullah. He writes to them one line, whoever comes with me is shaheed. In other words, first of all, you should be with me, and I'm just letting you know that the end is shahada. That shouldn't get in the way though, because you're chosen ones. Allah has more expectations. Ustushhid, and whoever doesn't join me, lam yudrikil fath wassalam. Goodbye. I have nothing else to say. Mic release, mic drop. I don't need to say anything else. This was salam in the end. Like really, like just hits the nail on the head really. Finishes it off. Like I got nothing else to say. That's it. Period. What we find in this one line is that the imam, the wording he uses lets us know something. That when he says shahada fath, he could have said whoever joins me will be victorious, and whoever doesn't join me will never be victorious. He could have said it like that, but he didn't use that wording. He said whoever joins me will get shahada, whoever doesn't join me will never taste victory. Through this, what we figure out is that when he says you won't taste victory, that means whatever's on this side is victory. I want you to pay attention. He could have said those who join me will be victorious and the ones who don't join me will not be victorious ever. But he didn't word it like that. He said those who join me, shahada, those who don't join me, no victory. What does this mean? That means this side has death, but it also has victory with it, because the opposite is no victory. You see the wording he uses? Death equals victory on this side. On this side, there is no victory, but we can also figure out that, but there's life on this side, because the ones who don't join him won't become shaheed. So life equals no victory. How does this read with a materialist's look and outlook of life? How does this read with a materialist's worldview? You see how Islam just mixes everything up. In a materialist world and worldview, life equals victory, and death equals lack of victory, equals defeat. But in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's books, and from His lens, from Allah's perspective, not always. Sometimes victory and life, life is victory, sometimes death is victory, and sometimes life is defeat, and sometimes death is defeat. What's the active ingredient then? I thought life and death determine victory and defeat. What is the active ingredient? Allah's satisfaction again. Remember I said this a few days ago. When you look at Abu Abdullah's movement, all you see is Allah all over the place. Allah, Allah, Tawheed, Tawheed, Allah's satisfaction, Allah's satisfaction. Even in the most subtle statements, you'll find there's an underlying Tawheed there that's pushing everything forward. Sometimes life is victory, sometimes death is victory. Oh, you're being contradictory, Shaykh. No, it can be. Why? Because if Allah is there in that life, Allah's satisfaction lies in life, then it's victory. And if Allah's satisfaction lies in death, it's also victory. And the flip side also holds. If Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's satisfaction is not there, even if you live for 1,000,000 years, it ain't no victory. Because in the end, death is going to come. كُلُّ نَفْسٍ دَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ. But 1,000,000 years is a far way out. It's like forever. Imam Ali says something to refute this in Nahjul Balagha. It's awesome. Like when I read this line, I like fell off the chair. It's just so true. He said, كُلُّ آتٍ قَرِيبٍ. Anything that's going to eventually arrive is close. 1,000,000 years from now, even if I was to live and I think I have that victory, although Allah's satisfaction wasn't there, death is going to come. Even after 1,000,000 years, once it comes, I'm like, that's it? That's it? Yeah, that's it. How many of you are like in your 30s? When we look back, you know, we're on that border, right? When you reach your 30s, mid-30s like me, and that metabolism starts huffing and puffing and can't keep up anymore, like, you're still eating the same way you would eat when you were young, right? But the metabolism is like, yo, dude, what's up? I can't burn it all off. When you reach that point, right, you're like, is it really happening? Yeah, it's happening. It's called age. It's happening. And you're like, but it was just yesterday that I was running around and playing video games and basketball and all that stuff. Really? That quick? Yeah, that quick. Why? Because it eventually arrived. When it arrives, it's like it was there all along. كُلُّ آتٍ قَرِيب. Anything that's going to arrive eventually is close, even if it's going to be 1,000,000 years out. So this person thinks that they have victory because they secured life. Let's just say for 1,000,000 years. Still, it's not worth it, man. Recite a salawat. And the imams, of course, they echo what the Quran says. I want to share with you what Quran says here. The same exact thing. It says in Surah At-Tawbah, verses 50-52, the Quran says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن تصبك حسنة تسؤهم. If something good comes to you, O Prophet, they're going to get upset. وإن تصبك مصيبة يقولوا قد أخذنا أمرنا من قبل ويتولى وهم فرحون. When something bad befalls you, O Prophet, they'll say, Alhamdulillah, you know, we have nothing to do with this. If an adversity befalls you, they say, we had already taken our precautions in advance. Good thing we're not part of this defeat, this failure, this hardship. And they go away exulting. They're happy. Then the verse of the Quran, you know, really drives this point home. It says that, look, Allah's satisfaction, if it's there, it's all good. It doesn't matter. You're calling it adversity. But in the lens of the angels who are watching, it's not bad, it's good actually. قُلْ لَنْ يُصِيبَنَا إِلَّا مَا كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَنَا هُوَ مَوْلَانَا وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ قُلْ هَلْ تَرَبَّصُونَ بِنَا إِلَّا إِحْدَى الْحُسْنَيَيْنِ. Tell them that, now this is about, I'm adding this, tell them, hey losers, like people who don't understand, do you await anything to befall us except one of the two perfections, one of the two good things? Husnayayn. They called it good and adversity. Hasana, musiba. The Quran says, Husnayain. Both of them are good. Whether it's a success from a materialist point of view, whether it's failure from a materialist point of view, at the end of the day, if Allah's satisfaction is there, right, my friend? If Allah's satisfaction is there, it's going to be hasana, it's going to be good. قُلْ هَلْ تَرَبَّصُونَ بِنَا إِلَّا إِحْدَى الْحُسْنَيَيْنَ What you're waiting for is one of the two good things. Like even the fact that he's walking here right now, it's a good thing. I love it when this happens actually. Usually lectures don't like that, but I like it. But we await that Allah shall visit on you a punishment from him or by our hands. But for you it's two bads. So you either didn't come or you came and you fought us or whatever. Either we're going to take care of business with you or we're going to die. That means you've been punished by our hands. Allah punished you through our hands. Or let's just say you defeat us on the day of judgment, Allah will punish you. So for you who thought that you were victorious, you defeated us in battle, it was just this dunya that you were looking at. But since what you did entailed Allah's wrath, it's evil, it's bad, although you see it as success. Brothers and sisters, success and failure are relative when it comes to a believer's point of view, a believer's perspective. We have hadith that when something befalls you, it is your reaction to that thing that defines whether this was a blessing or not. For some people, they make it big. That is not a blessing for them. Because they use haram means, for example, to get there. I don't know. I made it. Yeah, you made it, but you crossed 10 of Allah's red lines and boundaries to get there. So this is a failure for you. Someone loses a loved one. They exhibit patience. They can be upset. They can be grievous. They can wail and mourn and all of that. That's okay. But then they won't question everything now. Right? They exhibit patience. For them, it's a blessing in disguise at the end of the day. Why? Because they just earned Jannah with it. They're earning more and more Jannah with it. So brothers and sisters, another practical point that we have to remember in our lives is that when things happen to us, good or bad, let's look and see if Allah's satisfaction is there or not. You've all heard the story of Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam, where they're going on their way to Karbala. Imam Hussein wakes up from a dream or a disclosure that he has. He says that I saw how this caravan is moving, caravan of Ashura is moving, and with it death is going. So right here someone will say, death? Oh my God, that's defeat, that's not victory. You know, what did Ali al-Akbar ask? What did he ask? He said, if death is accompanying us and is inevitable, tell me, O Father, are we going to be on the straight path or not? Although he knows he's on the straight path, but still he wants to make sure that at that moment, when death comes and knocks on his door and says, time to go, am I going to be on the right path? His father says, yeah, we will be on the right path. He says, idhan, okay. Idhan, okay, as a result, la nubali bil maut, who cares about death? هَلْ تَرَبَّصُونَ بِنَا إِلَّا إِحْدَى الْحُسْنَيَيْنِ This is what Abu Abdullah teaches us. And this is where, slowly, once again, our theme comes in. One of the things that we don't have to worry about too much, brothers and sisters, when tragedies befall us, when hardship comes our way, first of all, we have to understand that hardship is for everybody. That they have the hadith by Amir al-Mu'mineen that hardship is going to be in the same amount for everybody. Some of the people that you would think have no problems in life whatsoever, once you actually sit down with them, you're like, yo, man, I don't want to be part of your life at all. I don't want that life. He'll probably tell you, yeah, I didn't want that life either. That life chose me or something. Sometimes hardship is going to be there. That's just what this life is all about. Material world, that's what it's all about. Hardship is going to come. You know, I said this to some brothers. Some people say, man, life stinks. No, life doesn't stink. Alam ad-dunya, material world stinks. That's just what it is. It's part and parcel. But now, once we understand that this this is part of it. This is part of the deal. It's going to come. What's more important is that I'm not going to despair and get worried that, is Allah upset with me now? Is He not upset with me? Was this a bala because He's angry? What's going on? Brothers and sisters, very simple. If a bala comes our way, first thing to do, you want practical advice, brothers and sisters, first thing you do is ask yourself, have I been committing sins in life or not? Am I trying to be obedient to Allah or not? Yes or no? If the answer is, I have not been disobedient to Allah, I have not been sinning, then this tragedy or calamity that comes, my responsibility right now is to show patience. That's it. Continue, try to fix the situation and move on. It doesn't mean that I'm a bad person necessarily. Why? Because you've been doing everything right. You're not sinning, you're not disobeying Allah. But if the answer is, no, I haven't been an obedient servant, and now a bala came, a hardship came, brothers and sisters, it doesn't mean that it's over now. Oh my God, the bala came, Allah is angry, it's over now. Wait for the next punishment, right? I heard there's a hurricane hitting the East Coast. If the answer is, no, I haven't been an obedient servant, then what do I have to do? Once again, I will show patience in the face of that hardship. One. Two, I'll go back and see what I've been doing wrong, maybe fix that up. Nothing to worry about. There are some people out there who think any hardship that befalls them, Allah has a problem with them now. No, there are a million reasons why something might befall us. What we have to do is change that, turn that, transform that into something that's in our favor. The sabr that we exhibit, the taqwa, the obedience that we exhibit, the revisiting my life and trying to fix, if whatever is out there that might be wrong, that itself is a blessing. All of a sudden, before you know it, this bala is no longer a bala, it's a ni'mah. It is not a niqmah, it is a ni'mah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us tawfiq, to get up if we ever fall, to not give up, to not despair, and to keep our hope in Him. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله رسالة الصلوات